The following message is brought to you by MacArthur Boulevard Baptist Church. We are many stories made one family by one gospel. If you would like to connect with us, please check out our website at MacArthurBoulevard.org.
So, yeah, as you're seated, you can make your way slowly to the end of Exodus chapter 12. Exodus chapter 12. We've been walking through this story together, and it's been so helpful and impactful. I want to acknowledge up front, and what a great way that I had planned to open up the sermon this morning, is the fact that we are a forgetful people. And by we, I don't mean we as a church, MacArthur Boulevard Baptist Church. I mean we as in humanity, we as people, as a human people, we forget things, right? You know, we forget people's names. How many of you are bad at names? We forget passwords. If you ever learn one of my passwords, you have learned all of my passwords. Because I can't remember my passwords. We forget where we put our car keys. We forget simple things, seemingly simple things, like we'll walk into a room and then we have no idea why we're there. Why did I come in here? Has that ever happened to you? I'll tell you one that happens to me quite often is that I'll be in the shower and I'll finish off a bar of soap. And I'll think to myself, now when I get out of the shower and dry off, I need to put a replacement soap in the shower. And for the life of me, I cannot remember to do that. And I will go a week or two using my wife's soap. My poor wife runs out of soap because I can't remember to replace my own when I get out of the shower. We are a forgetful people, and the reality is, it's not just an us problem. The people of Israel were a forgetful people, and God knew that. And because He knew that, He gave them certain signs that would help them to remember, that would help them to recall all of the faithfulness, the faithful works that He had done in their past. Now, as we continue on in the narrative, we get to some additional instructions that the Lord is going to add to the people of Israel around their celebration of Passover. And when you're reading the text, I know that it can feel a little bit redundant because you're like, man, he's already been talking about the Passover. Why are we still talking about the Passover? But he not only gives some new instructions for the Passover celebration, but he gives some new instructions that he hasn't talked about at all up to this point, namely the consecration of the firstborn in Israel. That is something that would have taken place at a similar time of year than the Passover celebration. These were springtime celebrations. Now, of course, people can be born any time of year. But typically, livestock are born. You got them, brother? Man, my man. Some people forget where they put their preaching notes. So, I hope that's all. Yeah, well, if it's not, it'll be a short sermon. So, no, this is perfect. Right on cue. All right. But livestock are typically born in the springtime, which is when Passover and the Festival of Unleavened Bread was being celebrated. What I want you to see in our text this morning is that this call for God's people to remember His past faithfulness, remember what He's done in your life, is the driving idea in the text, okay? So let me just point this out to you in a couple of places. Look at chapter 13, verse 3. It says, "Remember this day when you came out of Egypt, out of the place of slavery, for the Lord brought you out of here by the strength of His hand." All right? So when you're performing the Passover celebration, you're celebrating the festival of unleavened bread, he says, remember what the Lord had done. Drop down to verse 8, he says, when you're performing these things, he says, on that day, explain to your son, this is because of what the Lord did for me when I came out of Egypt. Let it serve as a sign for you on your hand and as a reminder on your forehead so that the Lord's instruction may be in your mouth. For the Lord brought you out of Egypt with a strong hand. He gives a very similar, almost identical exhortation down in verse 14. Now drop all the way down to verse 16 and he says it again. He says, so let it be a sign on your hand and a symbol on your forehead. Why? For the Lord brought us out of Egypt by the strength of his hand. Okay? So you can see that the focus of our text this morning is this exhortation for the people of God to carry out these celebrations, these signs, these visible, tangible signs as a memorial to help them and future generations behind them to remember specifically that they had been saved by God's strong hand. Okay? So as God gives these additional instructions for the Passover, and then as he gives some new instructions for this new sign, this new memorial, the consecration of the firstborn, what I want us to see is what God's people were called to remember when they celebrated these ceremonies, when they celebrated these signs. What were they supposed to remember? Okay, let's look at the first section, the end of chapter 12. He's giving these new instructions to the Passover. He had already given instructions for how the Passover was to be celebrated. The focus here now is who is supposed to participate in the Passover meal. And by the way, that was a relevant question, the who question, who can share this meal, because just five verses earlier, we were told that a mixed multitude came out of Egypt with Israel. So now in the community, you have Israelites, you have non-Israelites. And so the natural question the people would have is, who's supposed to celebrate this meal with us? Who's supposed to share this meal with us? And the short answer that God gives to that who question, can just anyone celebrate the Passover meal? The short answer is no. It's not just for anyone. Look at the end of chapter 12 in verse 43. It says, this is the statute of the Passover. No foreigner may eat it. So evidently this was a special meal for the people of God. Now, when he says that no foreigner may eat it, what I want to show you is that the issue here is not primarily one of race. It is one of grace. And you see that as you keep going in the text. So the word that's translated there, foreigner, that's the Hebrew word nakar. Okay? Nakar is regularly used in Hebrew simply to refer to anyone who is outside of the covenant community of God. Really, a better translation there would be an outsider, those who are not a part of this covenant community. And you can kind of, verse 44 clarifies this, because in verse 44 it says that a slave, and who could be a part of any number of nations or ethnicities, but who would be more entrenched in the community and in the Israelite family, it says they could participate if they had been circumcised. Okay, now remember, circumcision was a sign of God's covenant with his people. To be circumcised was to say to the community of Israel and to the world, Yahweh is my God, and Yahweh's people are my people. And so whatever gods I used to follow, I follow no more. I'm now committed in covenant with the Lord and his steadfast love. And those who had been circumcised thus then are, it tells us, included in the Passover meal. The text goes on to say that temporary residents, hired workers, foreign aliens, these are folks who temporarily were simply dwelling among the Israelites or passing through on their way somewhere else. They were not supposed to participate because they were not a part of the covenant community of Israel. And that's an important thing to notice there. It reminds us that simply being in proximity to the people of God doesn't actually make you in itself a part of the people of God. Proximity isn't the issue here. And this Passover meal was specifically for those, the text tells us, that were a part of this community, this covenant community, and who had received the sign, the initiating sign of that covenant community, specifically the sign, external sign of circumcision. So what we see here is there was an inclusive exclusivity to how the community of the people of God were to think and operate. There was inclusivity in the sense that anyone was welcome to commit themselves to the Lord and be a part of the covenant community of God, to turn and to make the Lord their God. That was open to all. But this meal, which was an ongoing sign of that covenant, was exclusive for those who had actually done so. Those who had actually committed themselves to the Lord and had become a part of the community of the Lord. So the point was that Israel had been made a special, a set apart, a distinct, a holy people. And so this Passover meal was to be a special, set apart, distinct, holy kind of meal. Okay. He says, don't allow those who follow after other gods, who are not committed to me, who are not committed to the Lord, not a part of this covenant community, don't let them share in the Lord's meal. Remember, this is the Lord's Passover. It's not Israel's Passover. The meal is always described in the text as the Lord's, not Israel's, so that Israel can just participate and share it with anybody they wish. No, it's the Lord's Passover, and therefore it must be kept holy. Okay. The goal was that every year when Israel celebrated the Passover in this way, with this participation, that it would remind them of who they were as a community, as a people. Okay? And this is the first point that we must remember as the people of God. All right? What are we to remember? Well, number one, we must remember who we are. We must remember who we are. We must remember that the people of God, on either side of the cross, the people of God are a distinct community. We are a distinct community. I want to talk about both of those words in order for a moment. A distinct community. First, we are a distinct community. That is, we are the people of God. We are set apart. We're different. We're distinct from the rest of the world around us. That means that our lives should look different. Our relationships, the way in which we think and see the world, the way in which we treat people and speak. Our families, our homes are to be distinct from the world around us because we are a distinct community. Similar to what we see in the community of Israel here, the same is true for the church of Christ today. There is a certain inclusive exclusivity to the church, to our community as the people of God. The church is inclusive in the sense that all are welcome to come to Jesus and be a part by coming to Jesus, through Jesus, to become a part of his people, his community, his church, his family. That it doesn't matter your age, it doesn't matter your ethnicity, it doesn't matter your social class or status or your personality, you can come to Jesus and you can come into the church of Jesus by faith in Christ. It doesn't matter your past. That trips people up sometimes. Your past might be littered with addiction. Your past might be littered with oppressive anger. Your past might be littered with sexual immorality. Maybe you in your past had lived a homosexual lifestyle, and you're thinking to yourself, I can never be a part of Christ's church. But what this is saying is that through Christ, by faith, committing your life to Jesus, there is an openness that all can come and give their life to Jesus, to trust him and follow him, and come into his universal family and to come into particular families in local churches, like here at MacArthur Boulevard. This demonstrates, or this is demonstrated in our church. Every time, and we practice it every other week here at MacArthur, every time we sit at the Lord's table together, this inclusive exclusivity, the Lord's table is the physical, tangible sign, the sign that can be experienced by all five senses that Christ has given the church today to remember what God had done for them and to remember who they were. We talked a few weeks ago about the close connection and relationship between the Passover and the Lord's Supper and how Jesus redefined Passover into this memorial meal that would point to the cross and what Jesus was doing through the cross. And so the similar answer is given. Can just any person sit at the Lord's table in communion? And the short answer is no. No, it is a meal specifically for the covenant community of God, which is now defined by one's response to and relationship with Jesus. And just like entrance into the community of God had a visible external sign under the old, namely the sign of circumcision, so does entrance into the community of God under the new have an external visible sign, namely that of baptism. So baptism doesn't regenerate a heart any more than circumcision of the flesh regenerated a heart. But it was the initial initiating sign of one identifying with the Lord, of one identifying with Jesus and the people of Jesus. And this is why the church, over its 2,000-year history, has always seen water baptism as a prerequisite to sit at the Lord's table in communion. Like Like circumcision, baptism is the external sign that God gave us to identify with Him and His people. And so only those who have identified with Christ through that sign are given the privileges of participating in this meal that commemorates our covenant relationship with God through Christ. Okay? So we are a distinct community. And we are a distinct community. Let's talk about the idea of community. I want you to look again at verse 46 of chapter 12. Talking about the Passover, it says, "It is to be eaten in one house. You may not take any of the meat outside the house, and you may not break any of its bone." By the way, the gospel writer John, saw the fact that they didn't need to break the bones of Jesus on the cross as a fulfillment of this type, that the Passover lamb was not to have his bones broken. Verse 47, "The whole community of Israel must celebrate it." Okay, you see the emphasis there. Passover was a community meal. The whole community was to eat it, was to celebrate it. Even though they were too large to do that in a one localized space, they were to at least get with their families and neighbors if their neighbors didn't have a lamb. They were to get together and families were to eat it together. In other words, you could not take the Passover meal as carryout. You couldn't take it to go. I want my lamb, but I'm going to go across the street and eat it by myself in private. No, that's not how it was to be celebrated. You ate the meal with your family because this was a part of the blessing that God was giving you in your Exodus, in your deliverance. He was giving you a community. He was giving you a family. He was making you into a people. And again, this informs how we worship. It informs how we sit at the Lord's table as the people of God today. The Lord's meal, the Lord's supper, we don't eat it privately, alone, isolated, in seclusion. We eat it when we come together. We eat it as a family. We eat it as a community. And as we do, we are remembering who we are. It's a part of the purpose of the meal, to remind us who we are. We're a forgetful people. It reminds us we are a distinct community, a distinct family of God. This is why both the purity as well as the unity and oneness of the church is so important. We are a forgetful people. But Jesus gave us this meal to remind us of who we are. We are distinct. We're set apart. We're different as a people. And so when you come to the Lord's table, not only this morning, but anytime you come to the Lord's table in the future, let this meal be an opportunity, a visible sign that provokes your heart to examine your own life. Am I living a distinct life? Am I living a set apart life? Is there anything in my life that I need to turn away from? I need to confess and repent. It reminds us that we're a distinct people. It reminds us, this meal reminds us that we are a unified, we are a whole people. We say it regularly here at MacArthur that we are many different stories. We're made up of different personalities and backgrounds, but we've been made one family by one gospel. Whenever you sit at the meal of the Lord's table, let that meal stir up not only your affections for Jesus, let that meal stir up your affections for your community, your people, the people of God, your brothers and sisters in Christ. Let this meal be a reminder to you how important whole relationships are within God's people. how important oneness and unity is among his people. When you come to the Lord's table, if you're ever aware, the Lord brings to your mind as you're reflecting, you're remembering, you are a distinct community, and he brings to your mind that there are relationships in the church in your life that are not right. There's conflict unresolved. There's division. There's contention. Let this meal be a reminder that provokes you with a sense of urgency. I got to address that. I've got to seek resolution. I got to seek oneness. I got to seek wholeness in my relationships in the church. Because this is a part of what the meal does. It reminds us that he has made us a distinct family, a distinct community. We must remember who we are. Now, after he, at the end of 12, after he gives these additional instructions for who's allowed to eat the Passover meal, we get into chapter 13. It tells us at the end of chapter 12 that they obeyed everything that the Lord had said. We get into chapter 13 and we find more instructions. And we find some new instructions there. He talks more about the festival of unleavened bread, but then he adds in, and the focus is this new ceremony, this new sign, which was the consecration of the firstborn. Not only the firstborn of your families, your children, but the firstborn of all your livestock, your herds. I've already said that this would have taken place around the same time as Passover and the Festival of Unleavened Bread, which is why he talks about it here as he's giving these instructions. This is when new herds, new livestock would be born. When your animal gave birth, the firstborn was to be given to the Lord, and that was done by way of sacrifice. You went and you sacrificed that animal as an act of worship, consecrating it, devoting it to the Lord. The only exception the text gives us in verse 13 is for donkeys. You didn't sacrifice a donkey because donkeys were an unclean animal. So you had two options. You could substitute the donkey's life with a lamb and sacrifice a lamb instead. Or you could break the donkey's neck and kill it that way. That sounds really difficult to me. I would have no idea where to start on how to break a donkey's neck. And so you had options there. You could go left. You could go right. But then the same verse makes it very clear that you are never to sacrifice your children, that your for your firstborn son, that he must be redeemed by means of a substitutionary lamb that would be sacrificed in his place. And this is something that you did every year. When you had a firstborn animal or you had a firstborn son as a way to remember what God had done for you in Egypt. Because it says, when your son asks you, why do we sacrifice the firstborn? You're to remind him, you're to tell him, because God saved the firstborn. He delivered the firstborn. He killed all of the firstborn throughout the land of Egypt, but he preserved those in Israel, those who had put blood on their door frames. He delivered the firstborn, and this is why we give the firstborn, we devote the firstborn to the Lord. Because of what the Lord has done. It demonstrates the second point that the people of God must remember. Not only must we remember who we are, but number two, we must remember what God has done. That's the point of all of this, was to remember. It was a built-in, tangible sign to help them to remember what God had done. These annual sacrifices reminded Israel of God's deliverance of them, how God had saved them from death in Egypt. Now, there's an important principle that you can infer from this practice of the consecration of the firstborn. The principle is this: whatever God delivers belongs to him. Whatever God delivers is devoted, it's consecrated, it belongs to the Lord. In a general sense, of course, that's true of everything in the universe. Everything belongs to God. But in a particular way, God possesses that which he delivers. Okay, this is why the end of verse 2, he says very clearly, it is mine. It belongs to me. Why? The firstborn. Why? Because he saved it from death. Because I delivered the firstborn from Egypt, it is mine. It is to be consecrated. It is to be set apart to me. It is to be given in the service of worship to me. It's a powerful principle that becomes very personal for those of us who have indeed been delivered by God from death. It means that our lives belong to God. They've been consecrated, made holy, set apart as His, devoted to the ministry of the worship of the Lord. Our lives are not our own. It means that Jesus purchased us with His blood. And now our lives are set apart unto the Lord. As we have to understand that there is, we like to compartmentalize our lives, right? We got those parts of our lives that belong to the Lord, and we got those parts of our lives that don't belong to the Lord, the sacred, the holy and the unholy, the profane. And we're fine giving God supremacy over these categories, but not over these categories. And what this reminds us is that there is no category of our lives that God does not look at and say, mine. Your relationships, your children, your marriage, your career and vocation, your money, your time, the entirety of your lives belong to Him. Are you giving to God that which is rightfully His? Hey, the song of the Christian life is, take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to Thee. I belong to Him. All of my life is His because He delivered me. He saved me. He redeemed me. And this is why we must remember what God has done for us. We must remember what He has done, lest we forget that our lives are His. Our lives belong to Him. We are a forgetful people. We forget. I was talking to someone earlier, and it's amazing how so much of the instructions of the Christian life can be boiled down to remember. There's some new things to learn in the Christian life, but so much of the Christian life is just not forgetting who you are. Not forgetting what God has done. And God is gracious because He's given us these signs. He's given us these mechanisms to help us remember who we are and to remember what He has done. And there are hints scattered throughout this text that explain why it's so important for us as the people of God to remember, to always remember the faithfulness of God. He refers in the text twice, in verse 5 and in verse 11. He references the fact that He's taking Israel to this land that is currently inhabited by foreign nations, which means foreign armies, which means that in their future, on the horizon, they have new temptations and they have new trials in the form of battles in their future. And God knew, this is why He tells them at the very beginning, I'm giving you these signs so you don't forget. He knew that if they forgot who they were, if they forgot what He had done, or allowed their children to forget the Lord, they wouldn't be faithful. When they were confronted with foreign armies, they weren't going to be faithful when they were confronted with the temptation of foreign gods. If they were to be faithful in the future, they needed to remember God's faithfulness in the past. And this is the big idea that I want you to take home with you this morning from the text. The big idea is this: our faithfulness moving forward requires remembering God's faithfulness in the past. Our faithfulness moving forward requires us to remember God's faithfulness in the past. Every one of us in this room this morning who knows the Lord, we all have moments in our lives, that in our past, that we can look back to, we can point at, we can recall, that demonstrate the faithfulness of God in our lives. We can remember that time where we saw the power of God. Demonstrations of His love for us, of His provision for us, of His protection of us, of His just His providence and sovereignty over our lives. We all have those moments in our lives, if we'll remember them. And beyond these moments that we can point back to and recall, Christ has also given us this meal to celebrate together, to help us remember the Lord, to remember who we are, and to remember what He has done for us. Listen, whenever the people of God, whenever we become afraid and start being consumed by anxiety, or we begin to stray from the Lord, it's often because we're simply forgetting who we are and what He's done for us. We're forgetting the faithfulness of God in our lives. What gives us strength to face future trials and future temptations is remembering God's faithfulness in our lives. I love the phrase that's repeated over and over in this text, the strength of His hand. Some versions translate it, by His strong hand. It says it in verse 3 of chapter 13, again in verse 9, again in verse 16. He's saying, don't forget God's strong hand. His hand is strong. Don't forget. Our hands are weak, but His hands are strong. They are strong to keep you. They are strong to lead you. They are strong to hold you. They are strong to lift your heads. Don't forget the strength of our Father's hands. And I love that God gives them this symbolism of binding their remembrance on their hands and on their foreheads. Ever written something on your hand so that you wouldn't forget it? A reminder written on your hands is really helpful because your hands are always out here in front of you where you can see them. You remember them. I've never written a reminder on my forehead. I've had friends that I thought were friends write things on my forehead while I was sleeping. But a reminder for yourself written on your forehead is less helpful because unless you're standing in front of a mirror, you don't ever see your forehead. A reminder written on your forehead isn't primarily for you. It's for the people around you, looking at you. You see, our responsibility as a redeemed community isn't merely to remember God's faithfulness privately, alone, but also with our words and our lives to be memorials ourselves, to remind one another of the faithfulness of God. Some of you today are in a place in your life where you're struggling in the fight of faith. Your faith is wavering. You're struggling in the fight of faith. And in just a moment, as we sit at the Lord's table, you need to allow this sign, this memorial meal, to provoke in your mind and heart a remembrance of His faithfulness in your life. Let this meal remind you of who you are and what He's done in your life. Draw strength in the fight of faith from the sign of remembrance that He has given us. Others of you aren't struggling as much. You're in a season of life where your faith is strong. There are hard things that happen, but you're in a strong, healthy place. You should recognize that there are people around you who are struggling, and their faith is wavering. And for you, use this meal as a reminder that we are to be a community of people that encourages one another, that reminds one another of the faithfulness of God, that we would remember together that He is good. As the author of Hebrews said, he says, "Let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works." He says, "Not neglecting to meet together, lest you forget, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near." Without each other, we are prone to forget the faithfulness of God. And so we together, when we come together to worship, when we come together to fellowship in our groups, when we sit at the Lord's table together, it is an opportunity for us to remember together of who we are and what God has done for us.